Chapter 29. The Force Strikes Back. Though the blockade of Naboo had been launched in direct defiance of Republic law, as much a protest against taxation as it was a challenge to the jurisdiction of the Jedi, it failed to achieve the immediate effect Plagueis and Sidious had anticipated. Far from the core, Naboo hadn't been invaded, and no important beings had died, as had occurred during the Yenchori crisis and at the summit on Eriadu. Thus, the blockade was viewed by many as little more than saber-rattling by the vexed Trade Federation, an inconvenience to those worlds that relied on the Consortium for goods, the latest in a series of confrontations to expose the incompetence of a hopelessly splintered Senate. Nevertheless, the two Sith had worked tirelessly to make the most of Naboo's predicament, to secure support among Palpatine's peers, and ensure not only that his name would be placed in nomination, but that he could win if nominated. Equally important, they had to make certain that Palpatine could marshal enough votes in the Senate to ratify his decision to appoint Higo Damask co-chancellor. For a change, Damask had taken the lead, making the rounds, making promises, calling in long overdue favors and debts, while Palpatine, for appearance's sake, made several futile attempts to meet privately with Trade Federation representative Lot Dad. Pestige, Doriana, Janus Grigiatus, Armand Izard, and others were also busy behind the scenes, planting incriminating evidence where necessary, and seeing to it that instances of graft were made public. Their efforts did not constitute a political campaign so much as an exercise in elaborate subterfuge.
"Bail Antilles remains the front runner," Plagueis told Sidious when he arrived at the Mune's penthouse. "Ironically, the crisis at Naboo has drawn the core worlds into a tighter circle, where Antilles has always been in danger of being dismissed as the candidate most likely to follow in Valorum's footsteps. He is suddenly the darling of those advocating for strong central authority."
"He can be undermined," Sidious said. "What about Team?"
"In addition to the Trade Federation, Team now has the backing of the Corporate Policy League."
Sidious remained indifferent. "The Senate is not ready to elect a militant, much less a militant Gran. Embracing the support of the CPL is equivalent to promising the repeal of anti-slavery restrictions." Plagueis' frustration was evident, even if his frown was hidden.
"Interest in Naboo is already beginning to wane, and with it, the sympathy vote we counted on."
Sidious had his mouth open to respond when his comlink chimed, and he held the device to his ear. Plagueis watched him closely.
"That is most welcome news," Sidious said into the device, as if in a daze. "I didn't expect this. A good choice, I think. I'm certain of it, Supreme Chancellor. Yes, I'm sure she meant every word of it."
"What now?"
Plagueis asked the moment Palpatine broke the connection. Sidious shook his head in disbelief.
"Valorum somehow managed to persuade the Council to send two Jedi to Naboo."
Despite all his talk about invincibility, Plagueis looked confounded.
"Without Senate approval, he tightens the noose around his own neck."
"And ours," Sidious said, "if the Nymoidians panic and decide to admit the truth about the blockade."
Plagueis paced away from him in anger.
"He must have approached the High Council in secret. Otherwise, Mas Amida would have apprised us."
Sidious followed the Mune's nervous movements.
"Dooku mentioned that the Council would continue to support him."
"Did Valorum say which Jedi was sent?"
"Qui-Gon Jinn and his Padawan Obi-Wan Kenobi."
Plagueis came to an abrupt halt.
"Worse news yet. I have met Qui-Gon, and he is nothing like some of the others Dooku trained."
"They are a pesky duo," Sidious said. "The nemesis of the Nebula Front at Dorvala, Azmeru, and on Eriadu."
"Then Gunray and his sycophants stand no chance against them."
Sidious had an answer ready.
two lone Jedi are no match for thousands of battle droids and droidekas. I will order Gunray to kill them.
And we will have another Yinchor, and the added danger of Gunray divulging our actions past and present.
Plagueis thought for a moment.
Qui-Gon will evade detection by the droids and wreak slow but inevitable havoc on the flagship.
Then I will command Gunray to launch the invasion ahead of schedule. Protecting the Naboo will become the immediate concern, as opposed to arresting the Nymoidians. Gunray may balk at the idea, but I will assure him that the Republic will not intervene. Plagueis agreed.
Amida can deny any request Valorum makes to convene the Senate in special session. Still...
They regarded each other in stony silence. Then Sidious nodded. I will see to it that Maul is ready. Plagueis pressed his hands together.
It is the will of the dark side that we finally reveal ourselves.
It certainly wasn't that he didn't trust Darth Sidious, but Plagueis had never observed Maul at close range, and he was curious about Sidious's relationship with him. He knew that they had seldom met outside the works, let alone walk together on a balcony of one of Coruscant's most stylish monads in the dead of night, wrapped in their cowled cloaks. But it was only fitting that they should finally do so. With 114D close at hand, Plagueis stood observing the two of them from afar, his presence in the Force minimized. The invasion and occupation of Naboo were proceeding on schedule, and the swamps were being searched in an effort to locate and isolate the principal underwater habitats of the planet's indigenous Gungans before they could pose a threat. But the two Jedi, Queen Amidala, and her retinue of body doubles and guards, had succeeded in blasting their way through the blockade. With Maul's help, counterfeit messages from the Queen's advisor, Sio Bibble, had been transmitted to the missing starship, and one transmission had returned a faint connection trace to the Hutt-owned world of Tatooine. On learning as much, Plagueis had considered asking Jabba to apprehend the Queen, but not for long, out of concern for what the dark side might demand of him in return.
"Tatooine is sparsely populated,"
114D said, repeating what the Dathomiri Zabrak was saying to Sidious.
"If the trace was correct, I will find them quickly, Master."
"Go on,"
Plagueis said quietly.
"In reply, Sidious is instructing Maul to make the Jedi his first priority. Once Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are disposed of, Maul is to return Queen Amidala to Naboo and force her to sign a treaty that cedes control of the planet and its plasma reserves to the Trade Federation."
The droid paused, then added,
"Maul says, at last we reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last, we will have revenge."
In the distance, Sidious turned to Maul. 4D sharpened its auditory inputs.
"Sidious says, you have been well trained, my young apprentice. They will be no match for you."
The words stirred deep misgiving in Plagueis, and he stretched out with the Force, attuned to its swirling currents. Momentarily, the gates that obscured the future parted, and he had a glimpse of events to come, or events that might come. Either way, he was not encouraged. Had he and Sidious misunderstood? Would it be better to abort the plan and trust that Palpatine would be elected even without having Naboo fall to the Trade Federation? Once the Jedi learned of the existence of one Sith, would they launch an intense hunt for the other? Sidious had formed an almost filial bond with Maul. Attached to the present, he failed to grasp the truth that this was the last time he and his apprentice might see each other in the flesh. Events were converging rapidly. Unexpected obstacles notwithstanding, Maul's tracking skills had led him to the missing Queen. But he had failed in his mission. Despite a brief confrontation with Qui-Gon Jinn, the Jedi Master and his party had managed a successful escape. The Zabrak hadn't been killed, as Plagueis had initially feared, but his crimson blade had identified him as a Sith. And now the Jedi, Amidala, and her retinue of guards and handmaidens were inbound to Coruscant in the Queen's reflective starship. Sidious had ordered Maul to go to Naboo to oversee the Nymordian occupation.
Pestige and Doriana have put a plan in place that will weaken the campaigns of your chief rivals,
Plagueis was saying as he and Palpatine hurried toward the skyhopper that would carry them to the anti-grav platform on which the royal starship had been cleared to land.
Coruscant will soon know that Senator Ainley Teem has been protecting a Dug who is deeply involved with Gardula the Hutt and the Bando Gora's Deathstick distribution network.
Another favor from Jabba?
The Hutt has become an ally.
With Black Sun headless, he will have free rein over the spice trade.
For a time, the information about Senator Teem has been sent to Antilles, who has been trying for years to have him removed from the Senate. When the corruption inquest is announced, Teem's support will disappear, and so will support for Antilles, whose ambitions have blinded him to the fact that no one in the Senate wants an overzealous reformer in the chancellorship. The Rim faction will then flock to you in the hope of being able to manipulate you, and the human-centric core faction will back you because you're one of their own.
Sidious regarded him.
Were it not for you,
Plagueis waved him silent and came to a sudden halt. Sidious walked a few more steps and turned to him.
You're not going to accompany me to greet the Queen?
No. The Jedi are still with her, and our joint presence might allow them to sense our leanings.
You're right, of course.
There's one more issue. The Naboo crisis has finally caught the fancy of Coruscant. If we could force a similar crisis in the Senate, your election would be guaranteed.
Sidious thought about it.
There may be a way.
He looked hard at Plagueis.
The call for a vote of no confidence in Valorum.
If you...
Not me, Sidious cut him off. Queen Amidala. I will fill her head with doubts about Valorum's inability to resolve the crisis and fears of what Trade Federation rule would mean for Naboo. Then I will take her to the Senate so that she can see for herself how untenable the situation has become.
Grand theater. She'll not only call for a vote of no confidence, she'll flee home to be with her people.
Where we wanted her to begin with.
I trust that the food is better than the view,
Dooku remarked without humor as he joined Palpatine at a windowside table in Mock's Cheap Eats the following day. A small establishment, catering to factory personnel, it overlooked the heart of the works.
The Senate is studying plans to develop housing projects in the Flatlands.
Dooku frowned in revulsion.
Why not simply build over a radioactive waste dump?
Where there are credits to be made, the lives of ordinary citizens are of little consequence.
Dooku cocked an eyebrow.
I hope you'll put a stop to it.
I'd prefer the works to remain unchanged for a time.
Dooku waved off a waiter and regarded Palpatine with interest.
So, a blockade prevents you from going to Naboo.
And what happens but Naboo comes to you?
Quite a piece of magic.
Palpatine showed him a thin smile.
Yes, my queen has arrived.
Your queen,
Dooku said, tugging at his short beard.
And from all I hear, you may soon be her supreme chancellor.
Palpatine shrugged off the remark, then adopted a more serious look.
That is, however, part of the reason behind my asking you to meet me here.
Worried that you won't receive Jedi backing if you're seen with me in the usual places?
Nothing of the sort. But if I am elected, and if you and I are going to begin to work together, It behooves us to give all appearances of being on opposite sides.
Dooku folded his arms and stared.
Work together in what capacity?
That remains to be seen, but our common goal would be to return the Republic to what it once was by tearing it down.
Dooku didn't say anything for a long moment, and when he spoke, it was as if he were assembling his thoughts on the fly.
With perhaps your homeworld as the spark that touches off a conflagration? Clearly, the crisis has benefited you politically, and that fact alone has certain beings wondering.
He scanned Palpatine's face.
Under normal circumstances, the Council wouldn't have subverted the authority of the Senate by honoring Valorum's request to send Jedi to Naboo. But for Yoda, Mace Windu, and the rest, Valorum is a known quantity, whereas Senators Antilles and Team and you have yet to disclose your true agendas. Take you, for instance. Most are aware that you are a career politician and that you've managed thus far to avoid imbroglios. But what does anyone know about you beyond your voting record, or the fact that you reside in 500 Republica? We all think that there's much more to you than meets the eye, as it were. Something about you that has yet to be uncovered.
Instead of speaking directly to Dooku's point, Palpatine said,
I was as surprised as anyone to learn that Master Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan Kenobi were sent to Naboo.
Surprised, of course. But pleased?
Naboo is my home world. I want to see the crisis resolved as quickly as possible.
Do you?
Palpatine held his look.
I begin to wonder what may have prompted your confrontational mood. But for the sake of argument, let us say that I feel no shame in taking full advantage of the crisis. Would that cause you to distance yourself from me?
Dooku smiled with his eyes, but not in mirth.
On the contrary, as you say, since I'm interested in learning more about the possibility of an alliance.
Palpatine adopted a hooded look.
You're resolved to leave the Order?
Even more than when we last spoke.
Because of the Council's decision to intervene at Naboo?
I can forgive them that. The blockade has to be broken, but something else has occurred.
Dooku chose his next words carefully.
Qui-Gon returned from Tatooine with a former slave boy. According to the boy's mother, the boy had no father.
A clone?
Palpatine asked uncertainly.
Not a clone, Dooku said. Perhaps conceived by the Force, as Qui-Gon believes.
Palpatine's head snapped back.
You don't sit on the Council. How do you know this?
I have my ways.
Does this have something to do with the prophecy you spoke of?
Everything. Qui-Gon believes that the boy, Anakin is his name, stands at the center of a vergence in the Force, and believes further that his finding him was the will of the Force. Blood tests were apparently performed, and the boy's concentration of midichlorians is unprecedented.
Do you believe that he is the prophesied one?
The chosen one, Dooku amended. No, but Qui-Gon accepts it as fact, and the Council is willing to have him tested.
What is known about this Anakin?
Very little, except for the fact that he was born into slavery 9 years ago, and was, until recently, along with his mother, the property of Gardula the Hutt. Then, a Toydarian junk dealer.
Dooku smirked.
Also, that he won the Boonta Eve Classic Pod Race.
Palpatine had stopped listening. 9 years old, conceived by the Force.
Is it possible?
His thoughts rewound at frantic speed to the landing platform on which he and Valorum had welcomed Amidala and her group. Actually not Amidala, but one of her lookalikes, but the sandy-haired boy, this Anakin, swathed in filthy clothing, had been there along with a Gungan and the two Jedi. Anakin had spent the night in a tiny room in his apartment suite.
And I sensed nothing about him.
Qui-Gon is rash, Dooku was saying. Despite his fixation with the living Force, he demonstrates his own contradictions by being a true believer in the prophecy, a foretelling more in line with the unifying Force.
9 years old, Palpatine said when he could. Surely too old to be trained.
If the Council shows any sense.
And what will become of the boy then?
Dooku's shoulders heaved.
Though no longer a slave, he will probably be sent to rejoin his mother on Tatooine.
I understand your disillusionment, Palpatine said.
Dooku shook his head.
I haven't told you all of it. As if the announcement of having found the Chosen One wasn't enough. Qui-Gon discovered that the Trade Federation may have had the help of powerful allies in planning and executing the blockade of Naboo.
Palpatine sat straighter in his chair.
What allies?
On Tatooine, Qui-Gon dueled with an assassin who is well trained in the Jedi arts. But he dismissed the idea that the assassin is some rogue Jedi. He is convinced that the warrior is a Sith.
Ignoring the reactions of apprehensive residents and wary security personnel, Plagueis hastened along a plush corridor in 500 Republica toward Palpatine's suite of crimson rooms. He had planned to be at the Senate building to hear Amidala's call for a vote of no confidence in Valorum, which would strike the first death knell for the Republic. At the last moment, however, Palpatine had contacted him to recount a conversation he had had with Dooku. The fact that Qui-Gon Jinn had identified Maul as a Sith was to be expected. But Dooku's news about a human boy at the center of a vergence of the Force had come as a shock. More, Qui-Gon saw the boy as the Jedi's prophesied Chosen One. He had to see this Anakin Skywalker for himself, had to sense him for himself. He had to know if the Force had struck back again, 9 years earlier, by conceiving a human being to restore balance to the galaxy. Plagueis came to a halt at the entry to Palpatine's apartment. Eventually, one of Queen Amidala's near-identical handmaidens came to the door, a vision in a dark-culled robe, her eyes fixed on the breath mask.
"I'm sorry, sir," she said. "Senator Palpatine is not here."
"I know. I'm here to speak with a guest of the Senator, a young human boy."
Her eyes remained glued on the mask.
"I'm not permitted."
Damask motioned swiftly with his left hand, compelling her to answer him.
"You have my permission to speak."
"I have your permission," she said in a distracted voice.
"Now, where is the boy?"
"Anakin, you mean?"
"Anakin, yes. He's the one. Fetch him, now."
"You just missed him, sir,"
the handmaiden said. Plagueis peered past her into Palpatine's suite.
"Missed him?"
He straightened in anger.
"Where is he?"
"Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn came to collect him, sir. I suspect that you can find him at the Jedi Temple."
Plagueis fell back a step, his thoughts reeling. There was still a chance that the Council would decide that Anakin was too old to be trained as a Jedi. That way, assuming he was returned to Tatooine. But if not? If Qui-Gon managed to sway the Council Masters, and they reneged on their own dictates, Plagueis ran a hand over his forehead.
"Are we undone?" he thought. "Have you undone us?"
Chapter 30, Taking the Future from the Now. Magister Damask was still unnerved when he arrived at the Senate building and hurried through its maze of corridors and turbolifts to reach Naboo's station on time for the event. During a recess that ensued after the call for a vote of no confidence, Queen Amidala and the pair of retainers she had arrived with had decided to return to 500 Republica. But Panaka was there in his brown leather cap and jerkin, along with Sate Pestage and Kinman Doriana. With scarcely a word of acknowledgement, Plagueis edged past the three men to join Palpatine on the hover platform.
"Did you speak with him?"
Palpatine asked, while the voice of the senator from Kuat boomed through the rotunda's speakers. The Mune shook his head in anger.
"Qui-Gon had already been there. They've gone to the temple."
"There's still a chance."
"Yes, but if the boy's midichlorian concentrations are as high as Dooku hinted they are, then the Jedi aren't likely to allow him to escape their clutches."
"High midichlorian counts don't always equate to force talents, you told me yourself."
"That's not what concerns me,"
Damask said, but he went no further. Gesturing broadly, he asked,
"Where do we stand?"
"Antilles was placed into nomination by Combe Fordox, team by Edsel Bargan."
"Traitors, Fordox and Bargan."
Palpatine was about to reply when the voice of Mas Amida filled the rotunda.
"The Senate recognizes Senator Ornfri Tarr of Ryloth,"
the Shagrian said from the podium. Say Tario is there as well, but Valorum, all but ousted from power, had either disappeared or was seated out of sight. The big blue Twi'lek stood proudly in the bow of the platform as it floated toward the center of the rotunda, flanked by hovercans. In the curved rear of the platform were Freetar's consort, a petite red-skinned Twi'lek, and Ryloth's co-senator and Deathstick distributor, Connus Trell.
"Ryloth is proud to place into nomination one who has not only devoted 20 years of unflagging service to the Republic, while managing to steer a gallant course through the storms that continue to lash this body, but whose homeworld has become the latest target of corporate greed and corruption. Beings of all species and all worlds, I nominate Senator Palpatine of Naboo."
Cheers and applause rang out from nearly every sector of the hall, growing louder and more enthusiastic as Naboo's platform detached from the docking station and hovered to join those of Alderaan and Malastar.
"You've done it, Darth Plagueis," Palpatine said quietly and without a glance.
"Not yet. I will not rest until I'm certain of a win."
It was late in the evening when Plagueis made his way onto a public observatory that provided a vantage on the proprietary arabesque of a landing platform on which Queen Amidala's royal starship basked in the ambient light. With the cowl of his hood raised, he moved to one of the stationary macro-binocular posts and pressed his eyes to the cushioned eye grips. Qui-Gon Jinn, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and the boy had arrived at the platform in a Jedi ship. Amidala, her handmaidens and guards, and a loose-limbed Gungan in an open-topped hemispherical air taxi. Just then, the latter group was ascending the starship's boarding ramp, but Qui-Gon and the round-faced desert urchin had stopped short of the ship to speak about something.
"What?" Plagueis asked himself. "What topic has summoned such an earnest look to Qui-Gon's face, and such confused urgency in the boy?"
Lifting his face from the macro-binoculars, he stretched out with the Force and fell victim to an assault of perplexing images. Ferocious battles in deep space, the clashing of lightsabers, partitions of radiant light, a black-helmeted cyborg rising from a table, By the time his gaze had returned to the platform, Qui-Gon and the boy had disappeared. Trying desperately to make some sense of the images granted him by the Force, he stood motionless, watching the starship lift from the platform and climb into the night. He fought to repress the truth. The boy would change the course of history. Unless Maul had to kill Qui-Gon to keep the boy from being trained. Qui-Gon was the key to everything.
Plagueis and Sidious spent the day before the Senate vote in the Limerge building, communicating with Maul and Gunray and seeing to other matters. Early reports from Naboo indicated that Amidala was more daring than either of them had anticipated. She had engineered a reconciliation between the Naboo and the Gungans, and had persuaded the latter to assemble an army in the swamps. Initially, Sidious had forbidden Maul and the Nymoidians to take action. The last thing the Sith needed was to have Amidala emerge as the hero of their manufactured drama. But when the Gungan army had commenced a march on the city of Theed, he had no choice but to order Gunray to repel the attack and slaughter everyone. Plagueis neither offered advice nor contradicted the commands, even though he knew that the battle was lost and that the boy would not die. Instead, he arranged for a conference comm with the leaders of the Commerce Guild, the Techno Union, the Corporate Alliance, and others, telling them that despite the legality of the blockade, the Trade Federation had brought doom upon itself.
"Pay heed to the way the Republic and the Jedi Order deal with them," Higo Damask told his hollow audience. "The Federation will be dismantled, and the precedent will be set. Unless you take steps to begin a slow, carefully planned withdrawal from the Senate, taking your home and client systems with you, you too risk becoming the property of the Republic."
As daylight was fading over the works, Sate Pestage informed them that Senators Team and Antilles were crippled, and that some of Coruscant's political oddsmakers were now giving Palpatine the edge in the election. That left only one piece of business to finalize. Attend the opera. Suspended like a scintillating ornament from a bracket of roadways and pedestrian ramps, Galaxy's Opera was owned by a notorious gambler and playboy, Romeo Treblank, and designed to function as an alternative to the stuffy Coruscant Opera, which for decades had been patronized by House Valorum and other wealthy core lineages. With the Senate scheduled to convene in extraordinary session the following morning, excitement gripped Coruscant, and in celebration of the possibility that the election of a new Supreme Chancellor might usher in an era of positive change, half the Senate had turned out. Never had so much Vader cloth, brocart, and shimmer silk graced the lavish carpets that led to the front doors. And never had such a diverse assortment of Coruscanti spilled from the taxis and limos that delivered them. Patricians and doyens, tycoons and philanthropists, pundits and patrons, Lotharios and ingenues, gangsters and their malls. Many clothed in costumes as ostentatious as those worn by the performers on the stage. Valorum had declined to appear, but both Ainley Team and Bail Antilles were among the thousands streaming in to enjoy the debut performance of a new work by a Mon Calamari mastermind. Only Palpatine and Damask, however, were personally welcomed by Treblank. Palpatine wrapped in a dark cloak, and the Mune in deep green, with matching bonnet and a breather mask that left part of his hoary jaw exposed.
"Word has it that he lost a fortune at the Bunta Eve pod race,"
Damask said when they were out of Treblank's earshot.
"The event Anakin won," Palpatine said.
Damask stopped short in surprise and turned to Palpatine for explanation.
"He captured first place."
Damask absorbed the news in brooding silence, then muttered,
"The boy's actions already echo across the stars."
A Nautilan female escorted them to a private box on the third tier, close to the stage.
their appearance prompting applause from some of the beings seated below, rumor-mongering by others. The lights dimmed, and the performance began. Watery metaphors alternated with symbol-laden projections. The experimental nature of the work seemed to enhance an atmosphere of expectation that hung over the audience. Their thoughts elsewhere, the two secret Sith sat in respectful silence as if hypnotized. During intermission, the crowd filed into the lobby for refreshments. Discreetly, Damask sipped from a goblet of wine, while distinguished beings approached Palpatine to wish him good fortune in the coming election. Other celebrated beings gawked at Damask from a polite distance. It was as if some long-sought phantom had become flesh and blood for the evening. Holocams grabbed images of the pair for media outlets. Damask ingested a second goblet of wine while the lights flickered, announcing the end of the intermission. Pestage had assured him that some of Palpatine's opponents in the Senate would be waylaid. Others rendered too drunk or drugged to attend the morning session. None would die, but several might have to be threatened, and yet Damask continued to fret over the outcome. Following the performance, he and Palpatine joined a select group of politicians that included Orn Fritah and Mas Ameda for a late dinner in a private room in the Minari. Then they retired to Damask's penthouse. Plagueis had given the Sun Guards the night off, and the only other intelligence in the sprawling apartment was the droid 114D, their servant for the occasion, pouring wine into expensive glassware as they removed their cloaks.
Sullustan, Plagueis said, holding the glass up to the light and swirling its claret contents. More than half a century old.
A toast, then, Sidious said. To the culmination of decades of brilliant planning and execution.
And to the new meaning we will tomorrow impart, to the rule of two.
They drained their glasses, and 114D immediately refilled them.
Only you could have brought this to fruition, Darth Plagueis, Sidious said, settling into a chair. I will endeavor to live up to your expectations and fulfill my responsibility.
Plagueis took the compliment in stride, neither haughty nor embarrassed.
With my guidance and your charisma, we will soon be in a position to initiate the final act of the grand plan.
Making himself more comfortable on the couch, he signaled for 114D to open a second bottle of the vintage.
Have you given thought to what you will say tomorrow?
I have prepared some remarks. Shall I spoil the surprise?
Why not?
Sidious took a moment to compose himself.
To begin, I thought I would say that while we in the Senate have managed to keep the Republic intact for 1,000 years, we would never have been able to do so without the assistance of a few beings, largely invisible to the public eye, whose accomplishments now need to be brought into the light of day.
Plagueis smiled.
I'm pleased. Go on.
Speaking in a low monotone, Sidious said,
Higo Damask is one of those beings. It was Higo Damask who was responsible for overseeing development of the Republic Reserve Administration and for providing financial support for the resettlement acts that enabled beings to blaze new hyperspace routes to the outlying systems and colonize distant worlds.
That will come as a revelation to some.
In a similar fashion, it was Higo Damask who transformed the Trade Federation.
No, no. Now is not the time to mention the Trade Federation. I don't see any problem with calling attention to the arrangements I facilitated between the Republic and the Corporate Alliance and the Techno Union, but we must take care to avoid areas of controversy.
Of course, Sidious said, as if chastised. I was speaking off the top of my head.
Try a different approach.
So Sidious did. And as the night wore on, he continued to amend and improvise, touching on Damask's childhood on Mygeeto and on the Elder Damask's contributions to the intergalactic banking clan during his term as co-chair. Wineglass in hand, Sidious paced the richly carpeted floor, often vacillating between confidence and misgiving. More than once, Plagueis voiced satisfaction with everything he heard, but he urged Sidious to save his energy for the morning. By then, though, Sidious was too wound up to heed the advice and kept reworking the order of the remarks and the emphasis he gave to certain points. The droid brought out a third, then a fourth bottle of the Sulliston wine. Pleasantly intoxicated, Plagueis, who had wanted nothing more than to revel in the sweet taste of victory, was beginning to find his collaborator's performance exhausting, and wanted nothing more than to close his eyes and drift into imaginings of his march into the Senate Rotunda, the looks of surprise, astonishment, and trepidation on the faces of the gathered senators, his long-anticipated emergence from the shadows, his ascension to galactic power. Unfortunately, Sidious wouldn't let him.
"That's enough for now,"
Plagueis tried one final time.
"You should probably return home and get at least a few hours' rest before..."
"Just one more time. From the beginning."
"The beginning?"
"Lord Plagueis, you said you wouldn't rest until our win was a matter of fact."
"So it is, and so I shall, Darth Sidious."
"Then let us celebrate that as well." Sidious beckoned to 114D. "Fill our glasses, droid."
With dreamy weariness beginning to get the better of him, it was all Plagueis could do to lift the glass to his nose. No sooner did he set the drink down than it tipped over, saturating the tablecloth. His eyelids began to flicker and close, and his breathing slowed. In 20 years of never having had to contend with Plagueis in a state of sleep, the transpirator clicked repeatedly in adjustment, almost as if in panic. A few meters distant, Sidious came to a halt, gazing at Plagueis for a long moment, as though making up his mind about something. Then, blowing out his breath, he set his own glass down and reached for the cloak he had draped over a chair. Swirling it around himself, he started for the door, only to stop shortly before he reached it. Turning and stretching out with a force, he glanced around the room as one might to fix a memory in the mind. Briefly, his gaze fell on the droid, its glowing photoreceptors whirring to regard him in evident curiosity. A look of sinister purpose contorted Sidious's face. Again, his eyes darted around the room, and the dark side whispered, "Your election assured. The Sun Guard's absent. Plagueis unsuspecting and asleep." And he moved in a blur. Crackling from his fingertips, a web of blue lightning ground itself on the Mune's breathing device. Plagueis' eyes snapped open, the force gathering in him like a storm, but he stopped short of defending himself. This being who had survived assassinations and killed countless opponents merely gazed at Sidious until it struck him that Plagueis was challenging him. Confident that he couldn't be killed, and in denial that he was slowly suffocating, he might have been simply experimenting with himself, actually courting death to put it in its place. Momentarily taken aback, Sidious stood absolutely still. Was Plagueis so self-deluded as to believe that he had achieved immortality? The question lingered for only a moment. Then Sidious unleashed another tangle of lightning, drawing more deeply on the dark side than he ever had. "Let's go over the second part of the speech, shall we?" he said, smoothing his tousled cloak. "You useless old fool." With a snarl, he threw the cloak back behind his shoulders and leaned toward Plagueis, planting his palms on the low table that was now puddled with spilled wine. "It was Hego Damask as Darth Plagueis who came to Naboo, determined to suck the planet dry of plasma and set the Trade Federation up as its overseers. It was Hego Damask as Plagueis who then set his sights on a seemingly confused young man
and with meticulous skill manipulated him into committing patricide, matricide, fratricide. Darth Plagueis, who took him as an apprentice, sharing some of his knowledge but withholding his most powerful secrets, denying the apprentice his wishes as a means of controlling him, instilling in him a sense of murderous rage, and turning him to the dark side.
Sidious stood to his full height, glaring.
It was Plagueis who criticized the early efforts of his apprentice, and who once choked him in a demonstration of his superiority. Plagueis, who denigrated him in private for hiring an inept assassin to carry out the murder of Senator Kim, and yet who allowed himself to be tricked by the Grand and nearly killed by mercenaries. Plagueis, who turned away from the Grand Plan to focus entirely on himself in an egotistical quest for immortality. Plagueis, who had the temerity to criticize his apprentice for having inculcated too much pride in the assassin he had trained. Plagueis, who attempted to turn his equally powerful apprentice into a messenger and mere intermediary. And Plagueis, who watched in secret while his apprentice tasked their true intermediary to reveal the reborn Sith to the galaxy.
Sidious paused, then in derision added,
Plagueis the Wise, who in his time truly was, except at the end, trusting that the rule of two had been superseded, and failed to realize that he would not be excused from it. Plagueis the Wise, who forged the most powerful Sith Lord the galaxy has ever known, and yet who forgot to leave a place for himself, whose pride never allowed him to question that he would no longer be needed.
Still struggling for breath, Plagueis managed to stand, but only to collapse back onto the couch, knocking a statue from its perch. Sidious moved in, his hands upraised to deliver another bolt, his expression arctic enough to chill the room. A force storm gathered over the couch, spreading out in concentric rings to wash over Sidious and hurl objects to all corners. In the center of it, Plagueis's form became anamorphic, then resumed shape as the storm began to wane. Sidious's eyes bored into the Mune's.
How often you said that the old order of Bane had ended with the death of your master. An apprentice no longer needs to be stronger, you told me, merely more clever. The era of keeping score, suspicion and betrayal was over. Strength is not in the flesh, but in the force. He laughed. You lost the game on the very first day you chose to train me to rule by your side, or better still, under your thumb. Teacher, yes, and for that I will be eternally grateful. But master? Never.
Sidious peered at Plagueis through the Force.
Oh, yes. By all means, gather your midichlorians, Plagueis.
He held his thumb and forefinger close together.
Try to keep yourself alive while I choke the life out of you.
Plagueis gulped for air and lifted an arm toward him.
There's the rub, you see,
Sidious said in a philosophical tone.
All the ones you experimented on, killed and brought back to life, they were little more than toys. Now, though, you get to experience it from their side, and look what you discover. In a body that is being denied air, in which even the Force is failing, your own midichlorians can't accomplish what you're asking of them.
Hatred stained Sidious's eyes.
I could save you, of course, return you from the brink as you did Venomous. I could retask your body to repair the damage already done to your lungs, your hearts, your aged brain, but I'll do no such thing. The idea here is not to drag you back at the last moment, but to bring you to death's door and shove you through to the other side.
Sidious sighed.
A tragedy, really, for one so wise. One who could oversee the lives and deaths of all beings except himself.
The Mune's eyes had begun to bulge, his pale flesh to turn cyanotic. You may be wondering, when did he begin to change? The truth is that I haven't changed. As we have clouded the minds of the Jedi, I clouded yours. Never once did I have any intention of sharing power with you. I needed to learn from you, no more, no less. To learn all of your secrets, which I trusted you would eventually reveal. But what made you think that I would need you after that? Vanity, perhaps? Your sense of self-importance? You've been nothing more than a pawn in a game played by a genuine master. The Sithari. A cruel laugh escaped him. Reflect back on even the past few years, assuming you have the capacity. Yinchor, Dorvala, Ereadu, Maul, the Nymoidians, Naboo, an army of clones, the fallen Jedi, Dooku. You think these were your ideas when in fact they were mine, cleverly suggested to you so that you could feed them back to me. You were far too trusting, Plagueis. No true Sith can ever really care about another. This has always been known. There is no way but my way. Sidious's eyes narrowed. Are you still with me, Plagueis? Yes, I detect that you are, though barely. A few final words, then. I could have let you die in the Phobosi district, but I couldn't allow that to happen when there was still so much I didn't know. So many powers that remained just outside my reach. And as it happened, I acted wisely in rescuing you. Otherwise, how could I be standing here and you be dying? I actually thought you would die on Sojan. And you would have if the Hutt hadn't tipped you off to Varuna's scheme. And yet that also turned out for the best, for even after all you taught me, I might not have been able to take the final steps to the Chancellorship without your help in manipulating the Senate and bringing into play your various and sundry allies. If it's any consolation, I'm being honest when I say that I could not have succeeded without you. But now that we've won the race, I've no need for a co-chancellor. Your presence, much less your unnecessary counsel, would only confuse matters. I have Maul to do what the risk of discovery might not allow me to do, while I execute the rest of the grand plan. Growing an army, fomenting rebellion, and fabricating intergalactic war, corralling the Jedi, and catching them unawares. Rest easy in your grave, Plagueis. In the end, I will be proclaimed Emperor. The Sith will have had their revenge, and I will rule the galaxy. Plagueis slid to the floor and rolled face down. Death rattled his lungs, and he died. 114D started to approach, but Sidious motioned for it to stop.
We're going to have to find you a new home and a new body, droid.
114D looked once at the Mune, then at Sidious.
Yes, Master Palpatine.
Sidious moved to the window, then turned to regard the murder scene. Higo Damask would appear to have died because of a malfunction of the breathing apparatus. He would have the droid alert the medtechs, but no autopsy would be performed, and no inquest would follow. Hollows of their appearance at the galaxy's opera would run on the holonet, and pundits would weigh in. Senator Palpatine might garner even greater sympathy. His delight in being elected to the chancellorship diminished by the sudden death of a powerful financial ally. Sidious moved back into the room to take a closer look at Plagueis. Then, after a long moment, he returned to the window and pulled the drapes aside. His spirit soared, but briefly. something was shading his sense of triumph. A vague awareness of a power greater than himself. Was it Plagueis reaching out from the far side of death to vex him? Or was the feeling a mere consequence of apotheosis? Outside, the summits of the tallest buildings were gilded by the first rays of daylight.